thing. We're still waiting for the chairperson to join in. Then we can start our meeting. Thank you.
Okay.
Morning, honorable members.
Morning, Chair.
How are you?
Fine,
good morning, Chair. We are fine, thanks, and yourself?
Okay, without any waste of time, let me declare this meeting officially open. And I welcome all the officials from the department, the CEO of NYBA, and the Chair, and board members if they are here. Let's move on and allow the department to make their presentation. Maybe before, are there any apologies, Nelisa?
Yes, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson, members, and delegation from NYDA and department. Chair, received two apologies from members. One is from Honorable Sonyana, who will not be attending, and the other one from Honorable Sharif, who is on the place. Yes.
Okay.
And then two are from two board members who are flying. One is flying in from to the country, the other one is leaving the country, Chair.
Who is the other one?
Oh, it's the first one is Miss Alexandra Proctor, who is flying, who's leaving the country today. And the other one is Miss Lebogang Molaise, who's been flying back today to the country.
No, it's okay. Let's hand over to the department. Dr. Benny.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, colleagues. May I request the presentation to be flighted by the Secretariat?
I have given over the sharing rights to Bungi, Dr. Benis. If it's okay with you.
Okay, Bongi, can you kindly share the presentation?
Recording in progress.
Thanks. Thanks, honorable members. Bongi, I'm going to request that you kindly move the slides for me. Today, we are presenting the National Youth Development Agency Amendment Bill to the Portfolio Committee in order to appraise the Portfolio Committee on the
the only one who's not hearing,
Dr. Benice? It's quiet, Swip. I can't hear her.
Dr. Benice?
Doesn't look like she's in the meeting anymore.
I think she's back. Dr. Benice?
Yes, I'm back. I don't know what happened. I've been kicked out, but then I'm back. Can we go to the next slide? My apologies. Thanks. I'm going to be starting off with the background. In terms of the National Youth Development Agency establishment, we know that it was established in 2008 as a measure of the National Youth Commission and Umsobomvu Youth Fund. And when the agency was established, it was established through its legislation, the NYDA Act number 54 of 2008, which is the act which is currently being amended. And then the reason why the act is being amended is mainly to address the challenges related to execution of the agency's broad legislated mandate. When the first board of the agency was in place, they presented to the then minister in the presidency that there are challenges related to implementation of the broad mandate of the NYDA Act. And as a result, they proposed that the Act should be amended in order to intensify youth development service provision. The department has since initiated the process of establishing of amending the NYDA Act, and there were extensive consultations which were conducted with relevant stakeholders across all sectors and spheres of government. What I would want to say is that when the Act was amended, we started first by consulting with all different provinces through offices of the premiers. And then we also consulted with the stakeholders in the civil society sector, including the NEDLAC constituencies. And then the presidency conducted the socio-economic impact assessment in order to determine the feasibility of amending the Act. And we requested the office of the Chief State Law Advisor to assist us with the drafting of the bill as well as certification of the bill. And then the draft bill was presented to Cabinet through the clusters, and it was then tabled in Parliament in February 2022. Next slide. In this slide, we just indicate why it is important to amend the NYDA Act. I've already indicated that one of the key issues is based on the fact that the aim was to intensify youth development service delivery, and then also to ensure that the broad mandate of the NYDA is actually narrowed down in order for the NYDA to be more focused and to reach as many young people as possible. It is important to do that given the fact that the young people constitute more than a third of the population in the country, and therefore a large segment compared to other population groupings. And then we know that in South Africa, like the rest of the continent and the globe, youth development is being intensified in order to advance empowerment and development of young people, but then also to address the consistent stubborn challenges that are actually facing young people, such as multidimensional poverty, structural unemployment, and inequality. And this is actually evidenced by the various social ills which young people continue to experience, such as their exclusion from the mainstream economy, lack of access to opportunities. So it is important to ensure that we actually put young people at the center in order to address their challenges through investing in them, but then also to ensure that they continue to participate in societal affairs. Next slide. In terms of the process that was followed in amending the NYDA Act, it is outlined in this slide. We solicited inputs and comments from the offices of the Premier, and then the Minister since appointed an interdepartmental task team, which was responsible for development of the or the drafting of the NYDA bill. The task team developed the base document, which proposed the amendment areas. And then the document was consulted with various stakeholders internally within government, but then also externally with the various stakeholders. A socio-economic impact study was conducted by the presidency and certificate was granted. The bill was refined, submitted to the minister for approval. It was then submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisors and then at the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development for drafting. The bill was consulted with the stakeholders again internally. It was presented to the various clusters. All the different government clusters were actually consulted. We have listed in the slide that the social protection and community and human development cluster, as well as the economic cluster, the governance, the justice, development committee, they were all consulted as well as their technical working group. The bill was then presented to the cabinet committee and to the cabinet for approval first as a discussion document. It was consulted again with the various stakeholders. The portfolio committee will recall that we were even requested that we should publish it in the government gazette, and that was done. It was advertised in the newspapers. It was even consulted with the NEDLAC constituency. The bill was then referred again to the various clusters of government where it was presented. Approval was granted that it should be presented to cabinet committee, and then cabinet finally granted us approval for the bill to be tabled in parliament in February. Next slide. In terms of the strategic focus of the bill is that it seeks to address the challenges that were identified in the practical implementation of the original NYDA Act. And this is in line with Chapter 11 of the NDP, which highlights the need to build an effective development system that brings an improved result for vulnerable groups while enhancing the state capacity to deliver services. As an entity of government, it's very important that the agency should be effective and efficient in delivery of its services. So if there are issues that hinders its practical implementation of its mandate, there's a need to actually address those. And then we also, the amendment is also aligned to the need to advance effective and efficient service provision as articulated in the MTSF, and all this will contribute to attainment of the NDP's goal of ensuring a capable development and an ethical state that directs implementation of the DDM. The consultations were conducted with the internal stakeholders such as the NYDA. We consulted the previous boards until even when this current board came into place. We also took an opportunity to present to the board and also to the executive management of the NYDA. It was also presented internally in the department to our EXCO. It was presented to our political minister as the political principal as well. We minister even convened the political youth formations as represented in government, and the bill was presented to them and inputs were received and integrated. It was presented to the technical working groups of the clusters cabinet committee, and then cabinet, to the National Youth Machinery Forum, which is consisting of the youth focal points across different government departments at national, provincial, as well as local spheres of government, and then even to the Social Youth Development Forum, consisting of the youth focal points within the social development sector. It was presented to the South African National Youth Council Portfolio Committee was also briefed on the bill. And then we have since published the bill from January to February. There were also virtual, hybrid and fiscal consultation sessions held across all the provinces. And we even presented to the local government stakeholder virtual session, which was convened by SALCA, and this took place in 2021 in Free State. It was presented to the national civil society organization, including NETLEC, and even to the various sectors, clusters of government again during the second consultation. Next slide. We have attached the consultation report, which has been circulated to the portfolio committee, reflecting the key comments and inputs which we received from stakeholders, and of which many were actually taken into account. And then we are going to be summarizing the proposed amendments. First, there was a need to amend the NYDA Act in order to ensure that there is alignment with the President's pronouncement for establishment of the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. This is because there was now a shift in the NYDA's reporting line. You'll recall that previously the NYDA was reporting to the Minister in the Presidency, and then as a result of this pronouncement, now there was a dedicated ministry to which the NYDA had to report to the Minister for Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. And then also to respond to the outcry from the public regarding poor visibility of the NYDA, particularly in deep rural areas. Like I said, that the aim is to intensify service provision. So this is to ensure that we reach as many young people as possible. And also to make the NYDA's broad mandate to be more focused given the resource constraints, and to ensure that resources are directed to better areas where there is greater need and improved management of public expectations. The other aim is to optimize service delivery by ensuring that the agency focuses on intensifying implementation in response to young people's needs, and to amend the objects of the NYDA of initiating, designing, piloting socioeconomic programs and projects that empower the youth. We also wanted to clarify the NYDA's role in relation to those of the other key players, and to provide for key programs that are scalable and have got high impact, such as the National Youth Service, Youth Entrepreneurship Development and Support, as well as Youth Advisory and Information Services and Issuing of Grants, to establish offices which offer the NYDA products and services at provincial as well as local levels, and to enhance the NYDA good governance as well as stability within the agency. The other key provisions are related to constitution of the board members. We have since increased from 7 to 10 non-executive directors. And you'll recall that previously all the board members, there were two board members, the deputy, the chairperson and the deputy chairperson, who are executive. And then now the proposals include the fact that we must just have non-executive directors, and to provide for representation of the executive authority within the NYDA board. The act even prescribes the eligibility age for appointment of the non-executive board members with voting rights to be between 18 and 35, and that the board, the term of office of the board should still remain at 3 years. And there is emphasis on acquisition of relevant qualification, knowledge, expertise, and experience, so that the board is actually led by young people who are well-versed with youth development issues and to provide for non-executive board members. I've already mentioned that. And also to provide for the filling of the board vacancies. So that because this was identified as one of the critical gaps, because most of the time you'll find that there are board vacancies which cannot be filled, and then now we have provided for appointment of an interim board. Next slide. And also to provide for dissolution of the board in situation where the large majority of board members resign, and to prescribe for establishment of the board committees at the discretion of the board, and to also provide for the status of the youth report every 2 instead of 3 years, given the fact that there are many changing circumstances which affect young people, and there is a need to actually appraise the country of the status of the youth. Next slide. To provide for organs of state to assist the agency as may be reasonably required in fulfilling its functions. And this is actually proposed in relation to the intergovernmental framework. And because of the many clauses that have changed, there is also rearrangement of the various various sections and subsections within the Act. Next slide. In terms of the inputs that have been received from the public, we have not presented all of them, but then we just selected quite a few. Facts. The issue of the age of the board members was hotly contested during the consultation session, because for an example, the issue that was contested was what happens if a board member is 35 and then they are still within the board. Maybe they should then be resigned or be released from being a member. However, at the end, the resolution was actually reached that the board member can actually be allowed to serve until their term finishes. There were also provision of the non-executive board members was also supported by the public, particularly given the fact that there are budget cuts and then the resources are very constrained, and there is also a potential between the executive board members as well as the executive members of the executive staff members of the NYDA. And there was also a need to balance the objects of the agency. This was actually important to ensure that there is no role conflict with other role players within the youth development space. The need for provincial representation or even provincial boards also came up. This, to a larger extent, actually delayed this act which started a long time ago, because sometimes you will find that there was a lobbying and advocacy for establishment of the provincial boards. But then this was also seen to be fragmenting the agency, because you will find that there may be misalignment between the provincial board and the National Youth Development Agency. 50-50 gender representation on the board and meaningful representation for persons with disability was also raised, and this was widely supported. We have seen as evidence the issue that our board is mostly female-led. And then the agency service delivery model was also, it was also mentioned that it must not ignore the issue of the 4IR, and however, it must even take into account utilization of the use of traditional methods in order to reach young people. This was in recognition of the fact that we know that we still don't have connectivity in most deep rural areas, and there is lack of 4IR infrastructure, and therefore we must balance the utilization of technology and traditional means. Next slide. We have presented presented this bill to the portfolio committee. And we are requesting that the portfolio committee should note the contents of the consulted NYDA amendment bill, and that the portfolio committee should note that both the department as well as the National Youth Development Agency teams will be available to support the portfolio committee for women, youth and persons with disabilities throughout the public participation process until this bill is enacted into law by the president. I thank you. Chairperson?
Honorable Masiko.
Yes, Honorable Song.
I see that
the committee on the chairperson
has a problem.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fenis. Do we have any contributions from the chairperson of the NYDA? Okay.
Thank you very much, honorable members, and good morning to the honorable chair, as well as the honorable members, the department, and then the board members. Chair, we would not necessarily have anything substantial to contribute, other than perhaps just to appraise the honorable members on the committee on the process and our involvement as the NYDA. As mentioned in the presentation, Honorable Chair, the NYDA would have been requested to make a written submission to the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities responsible for amending this particular act, which is the NYDA Act, which the agency did. The agency had participated in and expressed its support insofar as the process of the amendment bill is concerned. And in that submission, the agency would have expressed that it supported the initiative of amending the NYDA Act with the hope that the efforts will contribute positively towards enhancing the functioning and functionality of the NYDA. Now, in addition to the above, Honorable Chair, the NYDA would have also participated in the technical team, and as already expressed in the presentation, would have made written submissions and supported the department in the consultation process. Now, this, Honorable Members, would have happened as it relates to the bill. The majority of the work in respect of the bill was concluded prior the appointment of the fourth board of directors, which is ourselves. However, the department, during our induction, had made a presentation to the fourth board, wherein it outlined the process to the board and afforded the current board an opportunity to make our own inputs, which we did. But I think it's safe to say that, Honorable Chair, we would have expressed our support for the process of amending the bill, and and we would have been satisfied with the process that would have been followed thus far, insofar as the consultation with the relevant
recording
stakeholders.
Stopped.
And we would then also equally express our support for the process that is ongoing, insofar as the parliamentary process. So
recording in progress.
That would be my brief summary as it relates to our involvement insofar as this process is concerned, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And honorable members, here is the presentation from the National Youth Development Agency. I don't know whether it's Kashifa or it's Dr. Tembe who will then assist us with highlighting what then becomes the process now that the bill is with us in Parliament. Is it Dr. Tembe or Kashifa if you can assist us with that?
Morning, Ms. Masiko. Just in terms of process, Nelly Swale will explain in terms of the parliamentary legal advisor, as well as matters pertaining to the public hearings and the way forward. So we'll hand over to Nelly Swale just to indicate to the committee who our legal advisor is from Parliament and then what needs to happen with respect to the public hearings. Thank you.
Thank you, Kashifa. Nelly Swale.
The Chairperson, that my internet other parts, but heard Kashifa correctly. We who is here is Ms. Lisa Naidu, and the parliamentary Ms. Sue N. Isaac, but she's not here. She's has attended. I didn't get much. I didn't get.
Masiko, thank you very much. I was struggling due to network problems. I don't know what was happening.
Chair, the NYDA has presented. Sorry, the department, Dr. Benis, finished presenting and then we handed over to the NYDA for contributions which they've made. We had then requested to get the process in terms of parliamentary process from Parliament. So Neliswa was giving us that, but she's also having challenges with network. We're not hearing her, so that's where we are currently.
No, but Kashifa can explain what is the next step. Where is Kashifa?
We requested Kashifa. Kashifa handed over to Nelly Swache.
Morning, Chairperson. I know Chairperson had difficulty early on. I was explaining to Ms. Masiko and members that Nelly Swache.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything. All the presentations, I didn't hear them.
Sure, no problem. The department, Dr. Benice, had gone through the presentation, but they actually hasn't shown members the actual bill and what it looks like. So that still needs to be done just to give members a sense of what the bill currently looks like in its current state. Because what members had received from the department now is the aim and the purpose and the outcome of the consultations, but members hasn't seen with the department what the bill contains. Like, that's number one.
Why didn't they bring the bill?
The bill
the purpose of today's meeting was that.
Chairperson, Dr. Benice, I'm sure, and the state law advisors also here, if there are any additional questions, can go through that. And I think once that is done, Chairperson and members, we can look at the actual process for the committee in which Nelise will explain who our legal advisor is and the process to follow with regards to the advert and public hearing. So we can just hand over to the department.
So what do you call this this process of today? What do you call it?
It's the introduction and technically our first reading of the bill. So the department will be given an opportunity now to show on the screen what the bill is, show members the title, and then go through just an with respect to the bill, what is contained in the bill, so that members are aware. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, can they do that?
Thanks, Chairperson. Bongi, can you kindly show the bill, and then I can just go section by section. Please increase the size.
Kosana, let's go into the kitchen. Check the gate.
Okay, thanks, Wongi. I think you will just scroll down as I speak to the bill. Okay. This is the National Youth Development Agency Amendment Bill, and then the purpose is to amend the NYDA Act 2008 so as to insert new definitions, to amend the provisions related to the objects of the agency, amend the functions of the agency, the provisions relating to reporting by the agency, to provide for organs of state to assist the agency, to also provide for governance responsibilities of the board, to provide for additional board members, to provide that the board members may not be reappointed for more than two consecutive terms, to provide that the board members must submit their financial disclosure, amend the matters pertaining to the meetings of the board, amend the funding of the agency, to authorize the minister to make regulations, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Go down. And then we have highlighted the various definitions of the terms that are commonly used in the bill, so that there is a common understanding of the various terms. So I'm not going to go to each and every one of them, but then what is important is that the minister is the executive authority. The minister responsible for women, youth and persons with disability is the executive authority to which the agency is reporting. Go down. And then in section 3 of the bill, we have actually amended the objects of the objects of the NYDA Act. You will recall that previously in the original Act, it was stipulating that the agency is responsible for designing, implementing, monitoring and evaluating youth development programs. So we have amended that to say that the agency, in order for it to be more focused, it will initiate, design and pilot youth development programs which are to be implemented. And then to give a classical example, the matric rewrite project, for an example, it was piloted by the agency, but then they are since now collaborating with the Department of of basic education in terms of implementation thereof. I'm not going to go clause by clause. I'm just going to highlight the issues that are actually very contested. Go down again. And then in section five, we have also amended the functional areas of the functional areas which the agency is going to be focusing on. We have now highlighted the National Youth Service as a flagship program of the agency, to say that the agency will focus on the National Youth Service program. Previously it was the National Youth Service and social cohesion, and we know that social cohesion is primarily the mandate of DSEC. And then on economic participation, we have amended that it will focus on economic transformation, job creation, and entrepreneurial support. There is emphasis particularly on the issue of job creation and entrepreneurial support, and you would have seen that the agency has already started with that. On policy research and development, we have said that the agency will focus on research and development with the policy being the mandate of the department, and then the department is since now focusing on policy development. On
Just wait a little bit.
Yes.
Why do you want to take away policy?
Chairperson will note that in terms of the current best practices, the parent department is responsible for policy mandate, whereas the agency is responsible for intensifying implementation of programs. So if we can just benchmark, for an example, with departments such as Department of Social Development, it is responsible for policy development. SASA is responsible for implementation of the programs. And another agency which the Department of Social Development has is the National Development Agency, which is responsible for implementation of programs, whereas the parent department, which is DSD, is responsible for policy mandate. So in line with all these best practices, the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability focuses on development of the National Youth Policy, as well as other policy frameworks, whereas the agency will focus on implementation thereof.
What is the view of the NYDA regarding this one?
Sure.
So you are saying they are going to concentrate on research and development, not policy?
Sure.
It's the DG. I joined through Bongi. Email. My apology for joining late. I was in cabinet, at the cabinet committee. At Schedule 3 of the PFMA, which the heading is other public entities, is that there are two schedules. There are two schedules that talk to public entities. Schedule 2 lists the public agents or public entities that have the powers to develop policy. There are very few. And then Schedule 3 lists all those that do not have the powers to develop policy, and NYDA is part of them. Schedule 3, and NYDA is a Schedule 3 public entity. So it doesn't have the powers to develop policy. I know that previously, when it was established, it was given those powers. But in terms of the national, and of the Public Finance Management Act, Schedule 3, it doesn't have the powers. Thank you, Chair.
But DG, the reason that you are taking it out is because of the schedule that you're talking about. When its initiation, at first, why was it given those powers?
Most probably, the National Treasury had not amended the legislation or whatever. I'm not sure, but it falls under Schedule 3 of the PFMA. It's listed, in fact, not just for, it's listed under Schedule 3 of the PFMA.
What is the view of NYDA regarding this?
Chairperson?
Yes, Chairperson?
Yes. I've mentioned that the board, the then board of the NYDA, realized that there were provisions within the NYDA Act which are not feasible for to be implemented. It was actually the board of the NYDA which listed policy function as one area that they are requesting that it should be transferred to the at that time we were not even the department, we were still in the presidency, but then they requested that the youth development should be responsible for development of the policy. It was on that basis that the youth development unit led the process of developing the first, second and the third policy. It was at the request even of the NYDA board at the time.
Can I ask the state law advisor, your legal opinion, Ms. Lisa? What is your legal opinion regarding this one? Where is Ms. Lisa?
Lisa is unmuted, but not audible.
Can the IT assist her to unmute her mic? IT, can you please assist Lisa to unmute her mic?
She is unmuted, Chair. I'm sure the problem is from her side.
So, as Muslims.
She posted on the chat.
She wrote what?
She wrote that she doesn't think that colleagues can hear her, but then she's unmuted.
IT, can IT resolve that problem? Maybe she must also check the volume, Yankee, maybe the volume. One of the reasons that makes me to dwell on this one is because there's a challenge with regards to CGE, whereby there were some flaws and they were removed from dealing with legal things. Honorable members can remember that. Kashifa, can you remind me what is the problem with CGE now?
Morning, Chair. The issue was around the legal standing. And that's related to the legal counsel practice. But that's a different matter in relation to the policy issue which Chair has just raised.
Yes.
Maybe if Ms. Nile could just log out and log in again, and then Chairperson, we could look at the next issue and then come back to her when she's logged in again. Thank you.
I'm dwelling on this one because you see, I don't want you as a department to amend things that tomorrow will come back to us, you know, on why have we done that, why did we amend it, taking out policy for NYDA. And which is something that is very much important. And as we speak now, DG,
yes,
as we speak now, I'm making an exam. I'm citing CGE problem that's what they are having now, where the state law advisors were amending some other things, and anyway, CGE was taken out of the list. You know, and not to do with other things. And now it's a challenge for them to do certain things as CGE. So that's why I was asking about this one. What is the view of NYDA and what is the legal opinion from the state law advisors so that they can share with us so that as we move forward, at least we know, Uguti, we did raise this in the meeting, and
yes,
this is what it gave to us. Yabo?
Okay, Chair.
Yeah.
But also, I think, Chair, they should take into consideration the fact that CGE is a Chapter 9 institution, which might not be covered by the section that I'm talking to. But NYDA is covered by the Public Finance Management Act, Schedule 3. So maybe that's where the difference is.
Yeah, I'm saying I'm citing a CGE, which is at a later stage, then something became a problem. That thing became a problem for them now, which they'll have to go back and correct it because it's blocking them to do some of the things that they are supposed to be doing. So. I'm saying I'm taking this one, Oguchi. This also we need to get a clear understanding so that as we move forward, we know exactly what was the explanation of the department and what was the view of NYDA and what was the legal opinion from the state law advisors. But maybe if Ulisa can. Log out and log in again. Maybe a problem is about sorted so that at least we get their legal opinion. Maybe Dr. Benis, you can continue to the other one, Roman point 4, and then Ulisa, when he's in the right space, then she can raise her hand and make the chair away, so that we can go back to this one.
Okay, before maybe they come in, CGE is under Schedule 1 of the PFMA because it's a constitutional body, and then NYDA is under Schedule 3. So I'm just saying maybe comparing the two might not assist that much.
And compare.
Yeah.
I'm saying as we move forward, these are the things that we need to have a clear understanding so that when we are agreeing with you, we would have discussed this and then we understand which this amendment is relevant.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Or not. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, I'm going to go to Dr. Benis and then Uli Samarasa, right, can shout so that as the Congress says that their legal opinion. We can continue, Dr. Benis, Roman Figure 4. Dr. Benis?
Okay. Sorry, it's Emmanuel here. Dr. Benis is trying to rejoin. She was kicked out. I think there's something wrong.
Oh,
she's
okay.
Trying to rejoin. I just got a call from her now.
Okay. Oh, there's someone with you today.
Yes, I can.
Yes, I want to say something
to you. Yeah, I'm going to come back.
Okay. Thank you very much, and good morning to yourself, Chairperson, to the honorable members, to the DG. So I think we were on section number 5, which speaks to amendments around the object of the agency. So we had just done Roman figure 3, and then on Roman figure 4, it's just a matter of changing the item is written. So governance, skills development, as opposed to training, and then the issue of also on domain figure number 5, speaking about youth advisory and information services. So you see in terms of the writing there are insertions that are being made. Those are the items that are underlined, and then the items that are in bold, they are those that are being removed from the original legislation. So in some instances, like under Roman figure 5, it is just a matter of cleaning the language and cleaning the grammar. So the National Youth Fund under Roman figure 6 remains as is, but you see that there is Roman figure 7 there, which speaks about management of interventions needed to assist youth to find employment, which I think if you consider the current status of youth unemployment in the country, is a very noble object to pursue for an agency of this type. So we don't want the agency to only speak about the National Youth Service and issues of research and development, etc., but also to manage interventions needed to assist youth to find employment. This will include, Chair, issues like your residential youth employment interventions where the NYDA is assisting, as well as many other partnerships that they started to assist with youth employment. If I may continue, Chair, we are deleting subsection 2 of paragraph A, and substituting it with the following wording. The agency must, for purposes of subsection 3, within its available resources, right, amongst others, provide for youth and information services, provide for products and services of the agency. Under B, we're speaking about providing life skills to youth, including personal development and life skills. Supporting youth work and also supporting education and training, providing funding in the prescribed manner and capacity to small, micro and medium enterprises, as well as youth-owned cooperatives, young people in their individual capacities, as well as youth-led and youth-serving organizations. So this is just an expansion of what the agency is already doing in terms of its grants and issuing of grants to young people and youth-owned enterprises. You will see that generally this is an expansion, or it speaks largely to what the National Youth Policy talks about. For example, Chair and members, there is under G, promoting healthy lifestyles among young people, which is one of the pillars of the National Youth Policy. You'll also see the issue of mental health under bullet number I, if we can go down. So that entire section C is a new addition to the legislation, Chairperson. If we can just go down, please. We are also then speaking about the issue of assisting in the development of norms and standards and implementation of guidelines that may be developed by the department in the youth development space. So the department's mandate will be to develop policy, and as is currently happening. But of course, it's an issue that, Chair, you are saying that even the state law advisor can come in and speak about But practice has been that the department develops policy, it also develops norms and standards, as well as guidelines. For example, the National Youth Service Guidelines have been developed by the department, taken through cabinet with the support of the agency, approved by cabinet, and then the agency is currently implementing the National Youth Service Program in line with those particular guidelines. We can go down. I'll just speak to what we are adding as well. You see that under M, okay, what is underlined is that the agency must conduct research that impacts youth. The current legislation was saying...
Why do you say conduct? Because the agency must perform any other function as determined by the minister. Or
yes. That is the one number two is on top. Yes, under M. So we are changing the language from the original legislation, which was saying conduct investigation. So we found investigation to be rather peculiar. So it's being amended to say research, which is very clear and practical. And then the one that you are talking to is that the agency must perform any function as determined by the minister. So at any point, at any given time, the minister as the executive authority can request the agency to perform a function that relates to any issue that pertains to youth development. So this particular clause then will allow for that particular work to can be done by the agency chair. And then
according to how you drafted it now, when you say the agency must perform any other function as determined by the minister, you mean the minister of Department of Women or any minister?
Yes, we mean the minister of Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. I think you'll remember that right at the top, there is a clause that defines who the minister is in this case. So indeed, you are correct. It is the Minister for Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities as the executive authority.
You know, why am I asking? Is that what if in future there's no Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities?
It's actually one of the things that we were advised by the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor to say that in legislation. So, right. If you look at the top, the definition speaks about the minister responsible for youth. So the minister responsible for youth, we know that now it is the Minister for Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. In the past, it was in a different department, in DPME, for example. And we know that in the future, it might be somewhere else. So our definition does not necessarily tie it down to the current minister, but whoever is the minister responsible for youth in whatever capacity, they will be the minister who oversees the work of the NYDA and support the portfolio committee in their oversight work. So I think we've kept it broad like that. I think it's a good observation, as you are mentioning, to say that we might not need to change the legislation if in future the president says that the function is going to be joining education or the function is going to be under science and technology or anything like that. We've kept it broad like that to avoid the need to amend the legislation because of changes at the executive level.
Okay.
Thank you. With your permission, I'll then proceed, Chair. Dr. B, when she presented earlier, in the presentation, she spoke about this particular one under Section 6 to say that the agency must now, instead of every 3 years, do the status of youth report every 2 years and submit that report to the minister. And then this clause then also speaks about what will the minister do once she receives this particular report. The minister, for example, must process it to Parliament within 90 days, and then it should also be gazetted within a reasonable time after tabling by Parliament. So that is just quickly what the new clause speaks about, the status of youth report, which is a very important report that speaks about general progress around youth development in the country, in line with the pillars of the youth policy and any other indicator which we deem as important in the youth development landscape of the country. So that's under Section 6. And then Section 7 also was touched in the presentation by Dr. Benish. It speaks about the role, the support that other organs of state have to assist the agency with in relation to the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act. So I will not be repeating this part. It just aims to ensure that the NYDA can be able to work with any organ of state as may be necessary. It can be in provincial government, in national government, or other entities. As long as they are organs of state, they need to see this as an obligation that they may support the agency in exercising its powers and functions. And then we can move on to Section 8, which speaks about the governance responsibilities of the board. And then I think key here is just that the new legislation now provides for the following, that the whatever board is appointed through the process of the National Assembly, it has to, within 12 months after coming into operation, determine a strategic plan, also determine an operational plan, and a succession plan, right? Additionally, it must determine an agency charter, which includes a governance checklist to monitor and evaluate the compliance by the agency with this act. And then additionally, they must also manage the financial and other resources of the agency in line with the PFMA and any other available legislative prescripts. So the main aim is to strengthen, Chair, the governance and fiduciary responsibilities of the board and what they need to do in those 3 years that they are there in order to ensure that there is continuity, there is stability, but there's also operational and strategic efficiency. If we can move to Section 9, which I think speaks largely about the appointment process of the board, Chair. It speaks to composition, it speaks to appointment on the board. So in the presentation that was made earlier, we spoke about the board moving from 7 members, 2 of whom are executive, to now moving to 7 non-executive members. Those are the voting members there. So we still have an odd number of voting members that are appointed by the president at the recommendation of the National Assembly. The previous legislation was saying at the recommendation of Parliament. So I think the practice is that the 2 houses of the National Assembly then are the ones that are responsible for this entire process. And then the new provision now says that 2 members are designated by the minister as ex officio members without voting rights. So what that means is that the number of board members, if you add number B there, it says that the chief executive officer is also an ex officio member of the board without voting rights. The new number of the board will be 10 members, 7 of whom are voting members, and then 3 of whom are non-voting ex officio members. Then we are deleting subsection 2 of the original legislation, and then we are substituting that particular subsection with subsection 4, which is speaking about the reflecting of demographic and geographical spread of the Republic. This is, of course, something that is already in practice and is contained in the original legislation. Then, under 4 there, you see that there are a couple of numbers, A, B, C, D, which prescribes in clearer terms the people that qualify to can serve as board members of the agency. So we are saying, first and foremost, those people must be South African citizens between the ages of 18 and 35, and they must have those relevant qualifications, knowledge and expertise. This was touched, Chair, when the presentation was made, so I'm just rushing through it for those that maybe was just were struggling with connection, but I will not be spending too much time on them.
Why not spend much time? Because it's a bill, we need to understand it.
All right, with your permission, then I will do that. So the A, we are saying that they must be South African citizens, aged between 18 and 35, and then they should have relevant qualifications. They should also possess knowledge, expertise, and experience in the field of youth development, which is very critical. Policy development is also crucial as a skill. Social development, business, economics, public management, or law. So we are talking about that wide variety of knowledge and skills that members of the board can bring together to move the board forward. And then one clause that came up here is that the members who turn 35 while they are on the board will be allowed to finish their term of office, right? Because I think the consideration here, even during the consultations, Chair, were that these people are appointed primarily because of what they bring around the table. So if a person is appointed aged 32 and a half, and then for the three-year term, they turn 35 while they've got 6 months left in their tenure, they will not necessarily have to step out of the board because they've turned 35. So they must be allowed to finish their board. Their board term. And then
they must be South African citizens between the ages of 18 and 35. Because previously it was a problem whereby a person who's above 35 will apply for NYTA. Because the act was not specific.
Yes.
So we will depend on the constitution, which created a more drama for us. When we say relevant qualifications, you see, as a portfolio committee, we were criticized by the public when we were doing the shortlisting, and some of the people didn't have a metric. But remember, with NYBA, it was accommodating everyone for as long as it's a youth. So the categories, all categories were accommodated in terms of those young people who are from poor backgrounds, who are not even able to go further with their education. A person, we were using our own discretion that at least a person must have a matric plus. But I'm sure the way you have captured it, saying have relevant qualifications, knowledge,
significant life
in the field of youth development, policy development, social development, business, economics, public management, or law. I think partly it's fine. We'll see as we move on with what else do we input as
continue, Manuel.
Okay. Thank you so much, Chair. So, yeah, I think on the last point that you are raising, I agree with you, will help.
Significant life experience, like personal growth.
As we go out for public
so I'm going to write...
It's going to be rising again because it is not necessarily the intention of the department to then exclude anybody who is, for example, not degreed, right? So if, for example, a person has a higher certificate there or a diploma there, but we sense that with the knowledge that they have, the expertise or experience that they have, they can still add value to the board. I think the window is still open if you look at how this is captured. So we are not trying to create an elitist type of organization. The other issue, Chair, was that the under Section E, subsection E, the president must, the document here now says, the president must, from the members contemplated in subsection 1, the above that we spoke about, designate one of the members as chairperson and another as the deputy chairperson. And both are, we are removing that executive provision to be non-executive directors. So when this new bill is passed, if it is passed in this format, then there will no longer be any executive members of the board. In the presentation, Chair, this clause was really delved into to say that the intention is then to clearly separate the governance and judiciary responsibilities of the board, as well as the day-to-day functioning of the executive of the agency in terms of the executive management. And part of what we did when researching these clauses was to check as to whether will this in any way affect the judiciary responsibilities of the board. And I think largely we didn't find any threat of that nature. The board can still have oversight on the agency, even if it doesn't have executive directors.
But the chair and the deputy chair, are they still going to be full-time? Because we need to guard against a situation whereby the chair and the deputy chair are part-time. Because, you know, when a person is not full-time, it's easy for the person to say to you, by the way, I'm not full-time, I'm doing this part-time. So how do you expect me to be accountable when I don't have those powers? You know, I thought that maybe this is desirable. Not to have Kantubani Lona, who or Pomunu Mundo, Lovas Kazami, or Stati Moto, and Zani, Owens, and why am I my check? So, at first, I thought like that also, but looking at how other entities are performing, especially when board members, all of them are part-time, it's a problem because they don't fully account. You know, and you can't blame a person. A person will tell you, I have a full-time job. So I'm doing this part-time. So it has its own challenges, one way or the other. Maybe we need to think about it, but in terms of the separation of powers, of the board members and the administration of the entity, I think that there must be a clear line, you know.
I thought I need to raise that also.
Can I come in, Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. My hand was up while we were at that point that talks to 35 and beyond. I just wanted to check because it might cause some challenges in future, because there's a presentation that I read that talks to amongst the amendments where there's a proposal or input from public participants with an input and recommendation that says that the term of office must move from 3 years to 5 years. Now, if I'm 33, I come into NYTA, and if we are serving 5 year term and I'm within 3 years, I'm like 36, 37, does it mean I will stay on up until I finish my term? I'm just wanting to check the clarity on this one, because 35 years whilst in office, it will mean that I can serve another 3 years beyond 35 years. And is that not going to cause problems and precedents going forward, where we have people beyond 35 years who want to still stay in NYTA, whereas we say youth ages from 18 to 35. Like in public service or in normal work environment, when people reach 60, it's pensionable age, they have to leave. Now I'm just checking here, what are we saying or what are we creating when you say that whilst you are 35, you can stay on up until your term is finished? What if the term is 4 years extra or 3 years down the line? So I'm just wanting clarity on this. Why do we have that, or why do we say that?
No, Honorable Pony, this clause is correct. They are not saying... Mm-hmm. A person, remember, a person is 35. When we are doing the interviews, we are taking young people below 35 downwards, below 35, from 35 downwards. Here, what they meant is that if, for instance, a person, when he joins the board, is 33 years old, or maybe is 34 years old, that person must be allowed to continue with as a board member, even after 35, meaning it's a three-year term, also be under 34, 35, and 36. After 36, he appeared the term for me. But obviously, most of the time, it's not advisable to take a 35-year-old to the board of NYTA, because especially those that maybe when they apply, una 35, and then the same year, was about 36. So that one, it tells you that this person who out already. Ngoba, una 35, who's serving a 4 months, who's 36. But a person who is in the system, who is in the board, within the right age of being a young person below 35, and then who's 36, 37, after that, that person must be allowed to finish the term. I mean, that's how I read this. Unless Manuel me read that wrong. Because it doesn't mean you must take people who are above 85. It says people who are on the board, and maybe they'll be turning 36, 37 within their term of office. That's my understanding. And I was going to some more clear. And when because even when we do the shortlisting and so forth, we do look at that, at the age range. We accommodate all cohorts from the age of 14 to 25, or 14 to 20, or 14 to 25, 25 to 30, and some 30 to 35. Yeah, those are the things that we're looking for. Beyond 35, that one, I don't think is considered. That person is not considered, because that will mean sowing good to lay.
Now, thanks, Chair. I was just checking in case of a person who comes in at 32, meaning by the time he leaves or she leaves, in 5 years' time, it will be beyond like 2 years or 3 years extra beyond 35.
Yeah,
you're quite right. So if it's left like that, it means anyone can stay till 38, 37. Thanks, Chair. If the term, depending on the term.
It's administrative, so you can deal with them. Because in terms of age, when as a panel, it's important to look at the ages of the people that you shortlist.
Thanks.
Yes. With your permission, I can come back, Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes, just to then clarify on the question of the Honourable Member, the chairperson is correct. The intention, or maybe let me first clarify to say, the new bill does not say that the new term of the board is 5 years. It was a proposal that we took to the public to say, let the board of the term be 5 years as opposed to three.
Right.
In order for more, we were providing reasons like more stability, you know, for the board to be able to effect its vision for the agency, et cetera, because 3 years we deemed it as too short. But it's one of the clauses which were very hotly contested,
right,
and
yeah,
rejected by our young people. So yes,
yeah.
So we've kept
right.
it at 3 years. Yes,
right.
We've kept it at three, and then so the fears then that are raised by the honourable member of 38, 39, I think then we can safely say as the legislation currently stands, there will not necessarily be that situation where a person turns 38 or 39 while they are on the NYDA board. So I think in line with what the chair has said, we have to consider various options. One, if a person turns 35, do we say to them, get out of the board because you've reached 35? And what will be the implication on the governance of the board and overall the work of the portfolio committee? Because it would mean that a person will have to be replaced in each and every scenario of that happening. We might also lose a couple of talented and people that would have contributed to the board and its vision by virtue of them being 32 or 33 by the time that they are appointed, you know. So I think that was the consideration that was made, and then ultimately it was agreed that if you turn 35, you will be allowed to finish your board term. Yes. Yeah. So
yeah, I agree with 3 years.
Yeah, indeed, it was something that was hotly debated. But you'll see there at one of the points that appears under subsection F. There.
You know, sorry, Manuel. I think the other thing that we need to look at. Remember the other board members up that time. But I feel that maybe one way or the other, we need to define their role because, you know, for instance, in the last portfolio committee meeting, some of the board members, they wanted to leave the meeting before time. And the chair forwarded me their apologies, and I declined all those apologies that it cannot be correct that board members, they want to leave the meeting. You know, 80% of them, they want to leave the meeting before it ends, citing my responsibilities, things that they are doing. And I said, no way, you said you availed yourself to be appointed to this board. The fact that you availed yourself to be board members, it means you have considered all your things that you are having in your bag, you know, and I refuse. So that on its own, it tells you what kind of people do we have. You know, they don't prioritize the board, the work that they've been, the responsibility that they've been appointed for in taking forward NYGA. So how I wish that we can have something, I don't know, as much as we are able to talk about the chair and the deputy chair, Uguti Babe, they were executive members, and those are the ones who were taken as if they are the ones who must be like horses, you know, and account on behalf of the governance structure. But remember, all of them, they have a role to play. I'm not sure. I'm giving you Manuel and with the department to think. I don't know, how do we have something that will bind them to take this as important rather than them? It's like Gibo. It's leather. Anyway, I'm part-time. Why did the person apply? When young people, the country is faced with many challenges of youth. So, it's food for thought, which in order for us to make people who want to become board members by such a serious, what is it that we can do? Emmanuel?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I think the point you've just made is well noted. Even the chair of the board, I'm sure she's also noted the same. Of course, then we will continue, Chair, to say that under number six there, you will see that we're saying that members will hold office for a period of 3 years and shall not be reappointed for more than 2 consecutive terms. So this is a new addition that we are making. So a person can serve on this board and then serve on the next one, but no more. So we will not have a person coming in for 3 or more terms as a board member of the agency.
Yes,
that will allow. And then we also then make provision here to say that should both the chairperson and deputy chairperson not be able to fulfill their responsibilities, the minister may then appoint any of the members that are remaining, any of those 5 that are remaining, as a chairperson or a deputy chairperson for a period that is not exceeding 6 months. So I think we are just trying to plan for any worst case scenario, because the previous legislation was silent in terms of things such as this. So what happens if a deputy chairperson becomes a minister or a deputy minister, or they move to another portfolio? So this will then provide a framework for the executive authority to be able to operate in that particular scenario.
Why didn't you put a clause when that says if these 2 are not performing, they can be removed?
There is a section, Chair, that speaks about members being removed from the board. I'm just going to speak to that as we continue going down.
Okay.
Yeah. Under this section, then we also speak about the conditions of services of the members being determined by the minister, who is the executive authority. So, in consultation with the Minister of Finance. So the previous legislation was saying the president. So, but now it clearly says the minister, and then shows who she will be working with. And then also it continues then to speak about how are the board members remunerated.
Okay, just hold it there. So hold it there. There was an instance whereby the board was having, I think, three or four members who resigned, and there was difficulty in appointing other people temporarily. Where the minister knows, and I don't know if you turn about so corner now, where we struggled on how then to who's that? When Emmanuel, who will up? So there was difficulty in appointing other people to be part of the board while the board was not creating. So our minister and had to run around, talk to the Minister of Finance. And the Minister of Finance was not was saying, no, I'm not the, I don't have those executive powers to appoint any person to serve in that board, because I'm not the minister designated for NYDA. And then later on, the minister had to go and discuss with the president so that they can give the CEO executive authority so that the NYDA can be able to function. So I thought that even that one, you are going to look at it. Dr. Penis, you know the story, right?
Yes, yes, Chairperson. Yes, at the time, the minister was unable to go ahead and appoint interim members, because there's no provision within the NYDA Act for the minister to do so. Hence, the Minister of Finance also responded that because he's not the minister, you know, he's not the executing authority, he will not also be able to do so. But of course, there was appointment of the CEO as the accounting authority of the NYDA for the period, in order to ensure the smooth running of the agency. So, is the chairperson suggesting that we should look at that? The reason why that was actually looked at, it was because there's no provision for appointment of the interim board members. Hence, yeah. In the current act, we are proposing that there should be provision for interim board members if there is vacancies within the board. So we were of the opinion that
did you propose it? I don't see it.
Yes, it is the issue of the interim board members. It is proposed within the act. Emmanuel, I'm not sure whether you already
Yes.
because I kept being kicked in and out of the meeting. So have you already gone through the issue of reappointment or of the interim board members? Or is it still...
Yeah, it's in the next section.
Emmanuel, silence.
It's not mine, Che. It's not mine. I'm not sure.
My apologies, Chair, is mine. It's on silence now.
Okay. Okay, so Dr. Benis put
yeah.
in if
yeah, we are still to present. We are still, yeah, Emmanuel is still going to present about it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Then maybe we can then immediately jump, Chairperson, to the amendments that are being made to Section 10 of the original legislation. Thank you. So the first one is the issue of the insertion of this point of under what circumstances can a board member be removed, right? So under A there, you'll see that it speaks about when a person has not submitted their financial disclosures in the prescribed form and manner. And then under the second one, there speaks about the procedure of removing a board member. It says that the president may, on recommendation by the minister, remove a member from office if the member is found guilty of a misconduct or is unable to perform his or her duties efficiently. I think this point here is the one that you touched on earlier about performance of board members. And then another reason here being provided is the absence. If a person essentially derelicts from duty and is absent from three consecutive meetings of the board without permission of the board or without any good cause being made available or known, or the person is then disqualified for any reason that may be listed in the legislation. So that person will then be removed by the president after recommendation of the minister. The clauses then continue then to speak about the same, saying that the president, on recommendation by the minister, may suspend a member from office any time after the start of the proceedings for removal of the member on any of the grounds that are contemplated under that section that I've just read, section 2 or subsection 2 there. So you see that then the bill provides for complete removal, but also if a process is undergoing, that member can also be suspended from the board. Now, this section then speaks under section 5, where we are speaking now about the issue of vacancies. So the legislation, the new legislation, proposed legislation, speaks about when does a vacancy occur. A, it occurs if there's a disqualification based on the reasons above, or if a member is removed from office, or if a member voluntarily resigns from office, or if unfortunately the member passes away. Then section 6 then speaks about, or subsection 6 speaks about, when a vacancy arises, what happens? So the minister may make a recommendation to the president on a nominee to fill the vacancy. But it goes on to say, where does the minister take these nominees or this recommendation? Then it proposes that this be done from the recent previous shortlist of the board candidates. So what it would mean is that the minister would then make a recommendation to say, a person has passed away or a person has been removed. We had a shortlist of 20 people from the process. And then these are the names that I'm recommending to the president for replacement of the person who might have exited the board. So we think this will help, because it will then reduce an incidences of long vacancies within the board, which might then affect the operations of the board itself, because it has to run via committees, etc. So this will help in closing such things. But if it happens that the board no longer correlates due to vacancies that are that arise from mass resignations. I think this is a case in point that you made the last time around. Or if there are any unanticipated delays in filling of the vacancies of the board, then the minister can make a recommendation to the president to dissolve the board. And then the minister can also manage the appointment process of an interim board in the prescribed manner, and then also make recommendations of candidate to the president for appointment to the interim board. So what remains is that the president will still be the person who appoints ultimately the final names of the NYDA board. But in this case, then the minister can make recommendations around the appointment of the interim board, and then ultimately the president will appoint. If I can continue on subsection 8, we are speaking about the issue of the interim board also then having a chairperson and another person appointed as a deputy chairperson.
Chair? Emmanuel, go back. Where I want to understand you, I think where we're not going to agree is the process of filling in of those vacancies. It must remain as a parliament doing it. So that will allow all those processes to happen the same way they are happening all these years. With those ones, we still want a parliament to continue to do them. And even the removal of a board member, that process also, the minister working with through the parliamentary processes must still be able to work together in terms of this. I think where we're going to agree with you is when you say due processes of parliament must happen, and the minister must be able to facilitate the process after the parliament has done its work in terms of the board, because we don't want the board of the NYDA to be appointed by the department. The NYDA board must still remain being a process done by parliament, appointed by the president. We want it to remain like that. But in terms of a process where we want the minister to assist, it's when there is a board member to be suspended, ministers still have to write to the portfolio committee, which there is 1, 2, 3 that has happened in NYDA, and then present the report to parliament, and the portfolio committee also goes back to the house and present the report for the report to be adopted. I think that process, I think we need to do it like that so that we are able, tomorrow people must not say the minister of Sarabanti Baike, minister of Zoguti, because dealing with the process for NYCA, we have seen it. We have seen a lot. Public participation and so on, we've seen a lot. So the processes that are done by Parliament, we want them to remain as they are. But flexibility in other issues, I think, remember, I'm just engaging you, but anyway, we're still going to do our own process as the portfolio committee, and then we'll also make our own inputs until it's finality. So, but I'm just raising these things to you as the department.
Chair, if I may ask the question.
Remember, this is the your bill that you are putting to us.
Yes.
And
yes.
As the portfolio committee, we are going to do our own public participation.
Yes.
And as the portfolio committee, we'll have to discuss at the end of the day and present the final product to the House.
Yes, no, I heard. I just wanted to ask the question in terms of where there's one vacancy, because there's subsection 6 and subsection 7, whether you object to both or just 7 where there's more than one vacancy, or is it both? So if there's one vacancy, Parliament will still have to fill that vacancy.
It's better when you can appoint an interim person.
Okay, okay.
You can appoint an interim person. But like, for instance, what we've done now with the CGE, we have shortlisted, Mthambe Abantu, Gunama Vakensa, four. We have shortlisted 6 people. So that in case the one passed on or one resigned, then the president can take from the remainder, the reserve, the 2 people who are not going to be appointed. That's how we do it. So in the NYCA, I think that the easiest way of doing it is when we do the shortlisting, at least kungabi among nama vacancy out 3, kungathathwa abantu kungashortlist iParliament ingashortlist abantu about 3. But then I want about 5. So that it's really my gena, makona oy one or shonayo gutatwe from the 2 that is remaining.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to say.
Yes.
Home minister can take from those on the list. Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
To avoid interrogative people telling you many stories and so forth. If people are there, we'll have a shortlist you, it's easier. The minister can then take those one and take it. I give Nizos a portfolio committee obvious, and then tell the next person nobody. So this is what you are recommending, and we'll endorse it. Obvious, there's a portfolio committee.
Yeah. Okay.
And then
Yes. Thank you, Chair. I think of course the debate is very helpful. So there, under subsection 6, we are saying exactly what you say, to say that the minister may make the recommendation to the president from the recent previous shortlist.
Yeah.
I think the consideration was that parliamentary processes by nature, they do take long. And I think it's intentional because it's our house as a country. You know, the discussions that take place have to reflect our will as a population. So for a board that is 3 years, for example, that is a 3-year term, if there's a resignation in the first year and then the parliamentary process then has to be taken for that one vacancy, it might not necessarily be a feasible mechanism. So that's why we are only talking about under subsection 6. The issue of the recommendation being made based on the previous shortlist that the portfolio committee has made. So it will not be the minister then deciding on her own accord. The legislation provides for that particular check. I don't know if I can continue where I was
No, you can continue. The theory that I wanted to give to you is the one that I was explaining now. That's right.
Exactly. So I think generally under subsection 5, the biggest thing that it achieves is that it removes that silence and that legislative gap or gray area that was there in the previous legislation where nobody knows what happens if there are mass resignations. You know, nobody knows how do you appoint an interim board. So we know that we had to benchmark with other legislation like the SABC Act, as well as the NDA Act, to see how do these issues then, how are they navigated? You know, what is the role of the minister? What is the role of the portfolio committee? What is the role of the president in terms of vacancies such as this? So, like you said, of course, the discussions will still be continuing as we go for public participation around how do we finalize these clauses.
Yeah, and I think the other one, TG and Dr. Benis, that I wanted you to cover is the one of, for instance, when a person joins the board, yeah, well, a person that is replacing a member who have passed on or who have resigned, I get it. That person who finish at the term of that person who have passed on.
Yes.
So in terms of office, it lapses the term of those people. And that must be considered as a term.
Yes.
The same as ECGE.
Yes.
When a commissioner resigns, you know, the vacancies that we're filling with CGE, there were twofold, there were two processes. We were filling in among vacancies of commissioners who resigned, whose term of office is ending 2024. We have, which is what we are presenting today in Parliament. The supplementary report that we're going to present today in Parliament, Tina basically half term. So our legal team, yes, the parliament said, no, we need to be specific. Ogoti, what do we mean by saying half term? Then we had to go back and look at the date of the current seven commissioners. Ogoti, when did they resume a duty? Ne? And that's where it starts. The term, that's where it starts from the letter of the president, when the president appoints them. And it ends in 2024. So now we had to be specific. We counted the amount, and the term of office starts there. It's 18 months. Yeah, it might have term meaning 2.5 years. So it must be specific. The term, the 2024. I 3 years. No. Doesn't go that way. So even here, we need to correct it that way. So that you want to ask, when we came, a half, I actually, I you tell, when you 3 years, we 10 months, tell another time.
Yes, we understand. I think it's the same understanding. Even with us, we understand that it's not a new term. It's just until Parliament appoints the new board.
Yeah. Thanks, DG. Okay. Ngakubeka Emmanuel, fanele ke ni marasi pale DG ngazo sike. Because the CGE is specific.
Okay. Confirmed. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair. I think it's noted. Then I'll just wrap up on this section to speak about subsection 9, which speaks about the fact that the interim board shall be performing the functions of the board until a new board is appointed. So it's just an interim arrangement. But also we were advised by the Chief Secretary advisors to say, we need to speak about the quorum for the interim board to say that a majority of board members will constitute a quorum
at a board meeting of the interim board. As we move towards wrapping up, Chair, we've inserted under Section 11 of the bill to say that if a board member fails to disclose any interest as required by Subsection 7 and where he or she is present at the venue where the meeting of the board is held or in any manner whatsoever participate in the proceedings of the board where they should not be participating, the relevant proceedings of the board shall be deemed null and void. So I think this is very important then for issues of accountability and transparency of board members to say that they need to disclose their interests. We will not have board members who do have a vested interest in other than advancing the youth development agenda in terms of the work they do as board members. So this is also put as one of the offenses in a way that may lead a board member to be suspended from the board or to have consequence management being taken. If I can move on to Section 12, it's just the issue of the board committees, to speak about the committees that the board may establish, including the Executive Committee, the Human Resource and Remuneration Committee, the Audit and Risk Committee, Development Committee, Social and Ethics Committee, and the ICT Committee, or any other committee that they may deem essential to the functions, even as the new things are coming up in terms of the development space for IR and any other things that are important in the sector. So I think that section speaks only to the issue of committees being established. And then Section 17 is also being amended to speak about, this is just a language change, to say that the board may delegate any of its functions or assign any of its duties to the CEO or to a committee that is referred above. So initially it was saying that the board can delegate to any employee. So we are amending that to say the board can delegate to a committee.
Repeat that one.
So the board may delegate any of its functions or powers to the CEO. So they can say to the CEO, lead this. But by the way, the CEO is already a non-executive, ex-officio member, I mean. So they can delegate any of their powers to the CEO, or they can delegate their powers to a board committee that is referred to in Section 12. So the initial legislation was saying they can delegate to the CEO or to any employee of an agency. But we know that the board normally operates through board committees. So they will form small groups within the board to say, this component is dealing with issues of human resources, or this is dealing with social and ethics, or this board committee is dealing with information, communication, and technology, and stuff like that. I hope it's clarified here.
Sorry.
Can I proceed? Okay.
No, sorry, because when you say parliament, the board may delegate any of its powers or assign any of its duties to the chief executive committee. Any employer of the Angamfuno, any employer of the agent.
That is correct, Chair. We are removing that language, that statement. The reason why it's in those brackets and it's bolded is because it is being removed from the legislation.
Yeah, it must, the board may delegate any of its powers or assign any of its duties to the chief executive officer, which is the CEO. That one, yes. Yep. Not any employer of the agents.
That is correct. So we are on the same page there, Chair.
I wanted to speak on this one also. But in a case whereby like the case we're discussing, when the board is not correlating, and there was a problem maybe even before of who must then take full responsibility and be appointed as an executive authority. I get it. The CEO was the one who was appointed as the executive authority. I thought that we need to cover it somewhere. I don't know how. While maybe the minister, who are waiting for the minister to appoint an interim members, but maybe in absentia of that, the CEO can be appointed as an executive authority. I don't know what Konje if all are underway, but that's what I'm thinking. You know, when sometimes you think aloud, some of these things they come and think about it. DG and Dr. Benis, I'm brainstorming with you, Neta. It's fine to brainstorm with you, so that when we go on, we discuss this thing. At the end of the day, we'll understand most of the things. Okay, Amen.
Noted, Chairperson.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. So. Section amendments to Section 18. So the original legislation, Chair, was saying that under Section 18, that the funds of the agency consist of money received from the Umsobomvu Youth Fund in terms of the Demutualization Levy Act. So that particular provision is then removed when you look at the new legislation. So subsection paragraph A of subsection 1 is removed from the new legislation completely, and then the others will remain. For example, money that is appropriated by Parliament and anything else around money that is lawfully received from any other source, donations and contributions received by the agency, those ones will remain here because that is currently the funding model of the agency.
All right.
Then the section 19 is just a minor amendment to substitute the word president with minister, to say that the minister may, after consulting with the board, make regulations regarding a whole manner of things. For example, any matter which pertains to the NYDA Act, any action in order to promote compliance. So it just gives the minister that particular responsibility, but also the obligation to do that in consultation with the board itself. And then Okay, under this one is just the amendment of the arrangement of sections. So you see that some sections are being moved from one point to the other to make for easier reading of the bill.
So amendment of arrangement of section of X. Is that right? Emmanuel?
Amendment of arrangement of sections of Act 54. It does
communicate the message, Chair, but probably, I don't know whether we need to, I don't know whether you need to change the language. But essentially, it's about how we are amending the arrangement of sections of the Act that was established or that was enacted in 2008. You know? So I think that is the message that they're trying to communicate here. Somebody can say rearrangement of sections. But there's a section here. Okay, I'm just not finding it. But I think the main thing is that we're now saying that the bill will move from with the establishment of the agency, move then to object, move to functions. So the other thing is that the bolded areas that are in those brackets, they are being removed. So it's also a language change. So it will say establishment of agency, object of agency, functions of agency, reporting by agency. So this is some of the input that we got directly from Office of the Chief Legal Advisor in terms of how the language in the legislation has to be captured.
Yeah, but it's important, Nani, to read thoroughly or carefully, because sometimes you can't even correct them after. So you need to be 100% sure.
Yeah, oh, indeed. I think Auslisa is also here. I hope maybe at the end she can also give some sweeping remarks, because I know she wanted to speak earlier, but she was struggling in terms of the network. And then the last point, Jay, on this one, is the short title to say this act is going to be called the National Development Agency Amendment Act of 2022, as currently things stand, and then it will take effect on a day that is determined by the president and also by proclamation in the Gazette. I don't know if we can go down a little bit. I think it's the memorandum of objects. Yes. So this one I will not read or go through, Chair, but it essentially talks to what we were talking about, but in much more simpler and wordy language type of explanation. So it's a clause by clause analysis from the first clause that was amended until the very last one. So I think maybe the last point will just be to say that all of this were submitted to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor and then also to the Parliamentary Legal Office, who did the numerous proofs. I think the fourth one was the one that was ultimately tabled by the Minister in Parliament. So this is what we've submitted, Chair, for your consideration. And I think thank you for the points that have been coming up as we were presenting, as well as the questions that that are helping us to really clarify the message we're trying to communicate with this particular bill. I'll hand over back to you, Chair, and back to the DG and Dr. Tlhaha. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Emmanuel, for your presentation. At least I was able to go through it. The only thing that I didn't ask you is whether you have costed this bill and how are the cost implications? What are the cost implications of this bill, given the amendments that you have made?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think we did. This is a question that constantly came up when we were doing the socioeconomic impact assessment. And then, safe to say, it is not anticipated that the new NYDA amendment bill will have a significant cost implication for the agency. Like, this bill will not require the agency to hire additional staff, for example. It will not require the agency to
undertake any new mandate than they are already implementing. So it is our anticipation that the recent increase in the budget allocation of the agency, I think this year they're talking about close to R1 billion that they're going to be getting, will be adequate enough for the agency to be able to meet the object of this particular bill. So I think ultimately we will have to then review when the final bill is developed as per the process emanating from the public participation from Parliament, if then at that point there will be any additional resource requirements. But at the current state, all of those issues that are provided for are currently within the budget baseline of the NYDA. Okay.
Okay. Lisa, can you please come in so that I can give honourable members an opportunity? Yeah, you can speak, Lisa. I can see your mic is on. What's happening now? Emmanuel?
Yes, Chair. I'm still here.
What is wrong with Lisa?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Let me try and call her. Maybe we can connect her via speakerphone.
Yeah, I'm phoning. Yeah.
Okay, Chair, I do have Lisa on the line.
Don't see any problem yet.
I think she's even trying to speak to her IT to assist her. She's unmuted and everything, but she still can't be audible on your side. So I'll ask her to mute on her side, and then I'm going to put her on speaker so that she can speak through my device.
Okay.
Okay, over. Lisa?
Apologies, Chair and honorable members.
Okay, I've asked her to just reduce her volume on her side. Okay, try again.
Vamela, Emmanuel, tell Lisa to forward their legal opinion.
Okay, that's fine.
To that part.
Can you hear me without any echoes?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah,
The chair can hear you. You can proceed.
Okay, colleagues. Honourable Chair, I'm going to start from the first clause. The question was raised in terms of our definition of minister. When this bill was first drafted, youth fell under the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. So when we as a group discussed it, the best way to deal with that, because there's no ministry for youth, was to frame it so minister would mean the minister responsible for youth. So in future, if youth should change to another minister or another ministry, it will be covered and there will be no need for further amendments. So that was clause one, the definition of minister. Then there was amendment of section 3 of Act 54 of 2008. This is clause 2, the amendment to section 3. And I hope I've captured it correctly. But the question raised was the issue of who makes policy. Now, when it comes to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, we don't comment on the policy directives of the executive. We only look at it from a constitutional standpoint and if the decision and the application will be constitutionally sound. In the current act, under section 3, the objects of the agency is listed as 3B, develop guidelines for the implementation of an integrated national youth development policy and make recommendations to the president. And in the bill, the department has decided to put under clause 2, the amendment to section 3, the objects of the agency are to initiate, design, and pilot youth development programs to be implemented by the agency in collaboration with organs of state, private sector, and civil society organizations. So my understanding from the department when this policy was motivated was that it still aligns to the objects of the agency under 3B, but here they're fleshing it out to specify that the NYDA will initiate, design, and pilot youth development programs to be implemented. And then under the amendments, it further goes on with D to say contribute to development of a national youth policy and an integrated youth development strategy. So the NYDA will still be contributing to the development process of the policy, but the policy will, at the end of the day, remain with the minister as the core function. The other issue was, and forgive me if I didn't capture this correctly, the Schedule 3A and how that impacts on this policy shift. Normally, with public entities or Schedule 3A and 3C public entities, it's an extension of the other public entities that have more autonomy because they bring in their own revenue. So with the NYDA, because money is still being allocated in terms of a transfer from the revenue fund, or we call it statutory money, it doesn't have that much autonomy and it's still under the supervision of the minister, even though the minister is not the accounting officer. So for that reason, and aligned to the public service, most policy is developed by departments through the minister to implement the overall national policy that our government more or less has in place for different sectors. Emmanuel, is that fine? Can I go on?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything from the chair and any of the members.
Because I can only hear you.
Yeah, no, I've put you on speaker. I've put them on speaker also.
Okay, so I've explained that. And I believe the next issue was the Clause 7, Amendment to Section 9, and the issue of part-time or full-time members. And a chair identified operationally the problems that the committee has experienced. We will, after this meeting, together with the department, sit down and consider this in more detail. And that comment has been noted. In terms of the appointment process and the policy decision to appoint youth as board members, then it will fall into labor arena or labor laws. Because at the appointment stage, at that stage, the requirement is the age of 18 to 35. Once Parliament acknowledges and finally decides who's the members of the board, then labor kicks in. And that contract of employment will say you are there for a term of 3 years or 5 years. If during that time, I don't know if I can make this as a joke, if during that time you move from being a youth to an older person, and no offense on that, but from a youth to an older person, you will still be covered in terms of labor law. And that was my understanding of the department's perspective. Chair, I believe you also covered that. The amendment to Section 10, I've noted that at this stage, the committee does not agree with the policy where Parliament has been removed as playing a role in vacancies and appointment. We will consider that with the current Act together with the department. This is, like I'm saying, I'm referring to the appointment Section 10, the amendment to Section 10. When you fill a vacancy, I agree, Chair, and maybe we need to just stipulate or explicitly say it in the amendment. If Lisa is serving a term of 3 years and heaven forbid something should happen after 1 year, the person that's appointed to fill my vacancy must be there for the remainder of my term. I believe that's the understanding that I've gotten from the discussions today. We can strengthen that together with the department. And amendment to Section 17, where the board may delegate any of its powers, assign any of its duties to the chief executive officer or committee referred to in Section 12, the chair raised the issue of if the board can't correlate or if the board, if the board is not functional. It is very important to consider the issue raised by the chairperson that we still need an accounting officer. And that point is also noted, and we will discuss together with the department what's the best policy decision to move forward with that. Chair, amendment to sections, well, the arrangement of sections. We don't say rearrangement of sections because we're guided by the legislative drafting practices, and we use Saunton, who is this author that more or less gives us a guide on how we should use the terminology. And the language is archaic, but this is the standard way we amend the arrangement of sections. Because in the bill, in the Act, the different sections is under arrangement of sections. So we say we are amending the arrangement of sections. I think, Chair, I hope I've covered everything. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. And I do apologize for my technical difficulties on this side. I will sort this out before the next meeting. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lisa. Thank you very much. I now hand over to honorable members to ask clarity-seeking questions. Any member? Second, Buzelea, cool.
Ujeo, Ketchu. Also, Buzelea, cool, Chair, and we were agreeing with most of the sentiments that you were raising along the way in terms of the presentation.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Masondo and Masiko. Mpiti? Honorable Mpiti?
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Chair, just a few things on my side. Look, Chair, I've looked at the proposed amendment, and I think there's obviously quite a lot of things that I would like to say, but I think some of the things have been covered. But just some comments that I'd like to make. The first one, you know, around the policy point, it's just merely to say that, you know, the young people of this country hardly have, you know, other young people deciding what their policy should look like. You know, and I think, you know, the taking away of policy formulation, in the least, in my view, is something that I think is a mistake, and that I think needs to really be reconsidered. And I think, you know, young people need to, through the following process with the public hearings, need to speak on, because in my view, young people must decide what their policy program should look like, should decide what type of policies they believe government should have. The ability to innovate what is no longer working is one of the most important things for young people. And so I just think, you know, that particular component is really, really unfair to do. To amend the particular legislation, because you can go to any, you know, department in the South African government. There's none really that is dedicated for the youth and that is run by the youth, you know. And so now when this happens to the one agency that has young people who, you know, understand the context of what it means to be young and the challenges of being young, and now they are not even able to formulate policy, I think is a bit of an issue for me. And then I'm sure the other ones have been covered by my colleagues, but I honestly don't get the increasing of the board members to 10. I think that's firstly, you know, a continual waste of money, of the taxpayers' money. I think the board has been operating all these years. So to increase it to 10 board members, there's just no rationale in my head for that. It just completely doesn't make sense. I think it needs to be removed. I don't think it should be part of the amendment, because it serves no purpose but to increase the number for what reason, you know. We must convince each other with our arguments, and we must win with the argument. We can't be trying to systematically engage and engineer a political process of debate and facts. So I just don't feel the argument we received from the presenter was necessary in terms of decision making, and that being the reason that there's 10 board members. I'm uncomfortable about the interim board. I'm uncomfortable that the minister decides it. I don't think that process should be there. I think it needs to be formulated in a different way. I'd like to just look at the consultation aspect quickly. I read the report, and you know, I just want to go to the political formations, and I see the political formations that were engaged. Can we just get an explanation? When did that engagement happen? How did it happen? Who was present? Because, you know, I'm seeing certain names there that I'm 100% sure were not engaged. So I'd like to understand that. And if it is not the case, people that are listed there as being engaged must be removed if they were never engaged, because that report is then false. The next one, Chair, you know, sometimes I just feel like this reads like a corporate takeover of the NYDA by the department. You know, everything, you know, is, you know, the minister can ask the NYDA to do whatever. I mean, you know, this is an institution for young people. So why does it feel like it's being taken over? And, you know, young people can no longer have, you know, a space in which they decide their future. You know, it just sounds to me as though it's just another thing that young people are losing in the manner in which this amendment bill is written. I think the reason the NYDA reported to the presidency initially was to give it some form of independence, give the people within the institution some form of independence, so that it remains a youth-run and a youth outcome-based agency for young people. And now it's kind of becoming, you know, something else, which is a bit concerning for me. Look, I think, yes, the minister should have some ability to coordinate her relationship with the NYDA, but that should happen without completely taking the independency away of the NYDA, in my view. And I just like an explanation on the two people that would serve on the board that would, I think, nominated by the minister, if I read correctly. What is the purpose of that? Why is that happening? It just doesn't make sense to me. Perhaps there can be clarity around that particular aspect. To be honest, you know, when I look at the amendment as a whole, I really just feel that, you know, a lot of it is all about, you know, removing certain powers and certain competencies and, you know, placing those competencies somewhere else. I don't understand how the bill is actually strengthening the NYDA, how it's actually working to improve the lives of young people, because the substantive changes to actually speak to young people and the issues that young people are being faced with weren't prioritized, in my view, in this particular amendment. What was prioritized, though, is, you know, shifting competencies around, giving the department newer powers. And I don't even think those particular positions have truly been understood, because we know that when government is constituted, anything can happen. So the fact that, you know, the assumption that the NYDA would remain in the Department of Women and Persons with Disabilities, youth, is something that we cannot be sure about. And whether it can always have an executive authority that is a minister is something we can also not be sure about. But I think this bill makes the jump to be sure about those things, which I don't think would be the view of an agency that really was dedicated for young people. You know, we have enough old people running government. We need young people to have a space somewhere. So, Chair, that's just my view. I mean, I'm not jumping up and down, you know, because I honestly don't see what the improvements are towards young people. And so hopefully, you know, there's more that can be looked at in terms of different spaces. I mean, we've spoken in this committee quite a lot about advancement in policy. We've spoken about cannabis. We've spoken about the opportunities that exist within that sector. We've spoken about different sectors, you know, that have not been actually touched, the blue economy, the potential of our seas around us, and how young people can enter those spaces which haven't been historically available to them previously. We know that agriculture is still a huge component of the economy. So I just don't see where those changes to strengthen, you know, how young people could be assisted in those levers make sense. And then also the part about education and educational requirements, you know, I also think that not everybody with a degree, you know, is not going to be useful. You know, we need to give everybody an opportunity, regardless of them being degreed or not. We know that access to institutions of higher learning is a challenge in our country because of affordability. We know that people don't finish tertiary level education because of access and affordability. And so why now do we want to block out the majority of young people that actually do not have, you know, tertiary level education from being part of this institution? It just doesn't make sense to me. This is about the young people, and young people who might not have a degree still have space to actually contribute positively through their own experiences on the ground, whether it might be running a business and they've never been to school, but that business is succeeding. And those are the lessons we should be looking for rather than trying to put, you know, a benchmark of how young people need to really be. I think that's really, really something we have to consider quite strongly, because we don't have those type of rules for members of parliament. We don't have those rules for councillors, local government councillors. We don't have those rules to become a minister or a deputy minister or to even become the president. So why do we have to really be so technical when it comes to young people is really something that is concerning to me. Chairperson, and then I just think, you know, we have to look quite closer and stronger into, you know, the development of what we want our society to look like in the next 10 to 15 years. You know, so if we're only going to speak about mental health, and mental health is very important, how exactly have we found meaning for different areas of what young people are considering? And that's what I'm lacking from this amendment bill. There's less about development and less about foreseeing, you know, the economy in the future and how young people are going to participate in it, and more of how the department takes over certain competencies, takes over policy, adds, minister has right to add people onto the board. The minister can remove people from the board. The minister, you know, all these things, which in the long run are simply cosmetic changes and do nothing for overall development of young people in this country. And that's quite sad to me, because that's not how we should be looking at the future, because we're talking about young people here. We're not talking about, you know, people who, 20 years from now, the people writing this particular amendment bill, we don't know whether they'll be here or not. But what we do know is young people will be. And they need to define it for themselves and not have another institution once again speaking on what they believe young people need to be doing. So I think that's problematic. I think the component on age is also very problematic as well. Firstly, if you're going to turn 35 within the term, you should not be on the board. That is my view. I believe that, you know, people who are 35 have little to understand, 35 and above have little to understand the experiences. And I'm not speaking on, you know, expertise and knowledge, but I'm speaking on experiences and lived experiences of young people who are 21, 22. And one of the things that we need to guard against is trying to change, you know, what people and how young people feel about the NYDA. So, you know, Chair, I think those things really have to be considered in my view. I'm glad that, you know, we've received a bit of the copy of the consultation report. And I've been able to go through some of those inputs that were given by people who had the opportunity to comment. But I just really would like some clarity around political formations, one, because I just really, really feel that it is not accurate information that appears on that report. And if it's not accurate, it should be removed, because I can confirm that some of the people that were listed on that particular consultation report were never invited. And if they were, I would really like to know exactly who it was. But from my view, it needs to really be redrafted. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpiti. I think some of the things that you have raised, they'll be discussed when we are dealing with the bill ourselves as the portfolio committee. And remember, we're going to do our own public participation. So we'll have to make sure that as the committee, we cover many young people as much as we can, so that when we deliberate on the bill for the last time, some of the clauses by that time we would know what is best for the young people of South Africa to be added on that bill for NYTA. Some of the things I have raised, and some of the things it's will allow a debate so that we discuss them thoroughly, and we'll reach consensus in some of them. Those that we think it does not fit in, we don't want to see them in the bill, we'll deal with those ones. Because it's not that it's a casting stone. When they present it to Parliament, it's for us as lawmakers to take it further and make our own inputs. That's why I was going through it, and where I felt that maybe this must not be here and so on, I've raised my points. But it doesn't mean we're not going to deliberate on those. We're still going to do it as a portfolio committee. But I think if they are no, I'm agreeing with some of the things that you have said, because also my concern is that I don't want the department to take over, you know, and I want young people to be free in doing things that will benefit young people. And they need to shape policy that will benefit young people. The point that you have raised in terms of policy, I think I also feel like I share your sentiments, but we have time. We'll have to deal with it thoroughly as the portfolio committee, honorable members. But for now, I think we want to thank the department for introducing the bill to the portfolio committee. And then we'll also consult with our legal team. And I'm happy that Dr. Tembe is here. I've seen him here on the list. And let's try to make an alarm. But yeah, O'Connor. And then he has listened to our arguments, so our inputs. And then when we deliberate with the bill, and then he'll be part of the meeting, and he will advise us. And you, as young people, you are part of the committee, you know what is best for young people. You know, sometimes I do make my own inputs for young people, but, you know, it's better also that you, as young people, you come up with your own ideas, things that you know that affects young people and what is the solution for them. So it's fine. I think we have come to the end of this presentation. Thank you very much, DG. and your officials from the department. And Lisa, thank you very much. I'm sure what next is the process of Parliament. Is the process of Parliament on what needs to be done after this? Because anyway, we are rising on the, I think on the 6th of December. So probably by next year we'll be busy with it. So for now, I think we're done with the bill. Nelisa, I'm not sure whether you are ready to tell us what you, from here, what's next.
No, I was saying on this or two questions going to present the document that we said in terms of the way forward.
Kashifa?
Yes, Chairperson, I can just ask Delisa to put on the screen for us the document that this she prepared for Chairperson and members. Chairperson, I'm just checking with the department and the NYDA and the rest of the officials will be part of the meeting now, or is it just for the committee itself?
Oh, okay. So you want them to leave us?
It's up to Chairperson and the committee to decide, but this is, the next part is literally about the committee deciding the way forward. So it's an internal process. So it's not really for the department or the NYDA. We can always inform the department and the NYDA after this what the outcome was in terms of the committee's decision in how they will proceed. So they can leave.
Okay, okay, they can leave. Okay, fine. You can leave NYDA and the department.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Chair.
Chair, I'm always here listening attentively.
Okay, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. You can let me know when I can start. Once again, good afternoon, Chairperson and members and colleagues. What we've had today is the start of the process around the NYDA Amendment Bill. In the document that I'd sent members, I just gave a broad outline that this bill is a Section 75 bill. It's an ordinary bill, not affecting provinces. I think the first thing to look at is it's an ordinary bill, Chedi. It doesn't affect provinces. So in other words, it's not a six bill where the direct implications provinces. Usually with a 76 bill, if I take, for example, some aspects of a children's bill, the matters pertaining to conditional grants where monies have to go to provincial departments, so there's a direct impact on provinces. In this case, for the NYDA Amendment Bill, it's a Section 75 bill. It's an ordinary bill. But we will have the legal team give more explanation to members in that regard. For now, we will look at one, the process. Now that we've had the introduction from the department, where do we go to from here? The next step is to look at the advert. In terms of when we advertise and for how long. Given the interest that we've had just around the appointments, we do know that the bill, even though it's very technical in nature, would have lots of interest. So that means it's deciding for how long you want to advertise the bill. December is not a good time. So we would look at towards the end of January and February, and then probably for 30 days. So it's again the committee will need to give guidance. Do you want 30 working days or 30 calendar days? In the advert itself, we would need to look at how would you want to receive submissions. Given again the huge interest, maybe a separate email in which we specify in the email where written submissions can be sent. And again, given the volume that we will be looking to get, we could also have an option of that online Google form. So it's two opportunities. One, with the online Google form like we did previously with the CGE adverts, you can send it via WhatsApp. The person logs in and then places their submission directly there, or alternatively, they could email. And again, we need to take into consideration the parliamentary program and possible changes to conclude the bill. So when we looked at the program for next year, Chairperson and members, from what I see, members come back from their constituency the end of January. Then you have training. And then the first week of February is again training stroke committees. You have two sets of recess, but the longest recess period, from what I've seen, is from mid-June until August. That's your longest, your 10 weeks. And in February, you've got SONA and budget. By end of March, April, May, we'll be dealing with our annual performance plans and budget votes. I think the other important thing to mention is for 2023, the committee has two bills, the NYDA amendment bill and the council bill. And they both, as I said, Section 75 bills, they're ordinary bills that do not affect the provinces. We're still waiting to hear about the council bill. I know that Leswa had emailed again the department on Friday to request an update in terms of where this bill is, because we haven't seen it tabled in the ATC. Leswa, if you could just go down. So again, like you've heard now what the NYDA amendment bill is and its purpose. If you want to move further down, Leswa, to the end of the page. Leswa, can you move down, please? Nelly? Leswa, please, can you move to the next page? Please, can you move to the next page? Thank you. So, as I said, in terms of the council bill again, from what has been published on the department's website, the council bill is still also very technical in the Section 75 bill. So in terms of, one, the committee needs to give guidance in terms of the advert. Two, in terms of public hearings, there's one of two options. Option A is, because it's a 75 bill, Lily, just go to the top of the first, the end of the first page, slightly up. It says option A, number one.
Recording stopped.
I think we've just, but I'll continue until Lily, so I can begin. So, Chairperson and members, for option A, section 75, you run the advert, it's run for a month. Thereafter, we request for public hearings at the national level, in which we can request for a set time. People in their written submission can also indicate whether they'd like to do an oral submission. Excuse me, Chairperson. And then, with the request for oral submissions, we will see how many people like to do an oral submission and then schedule the time at a venue in Parliament or outside Parliament in which the respective person who like to do an oral submission then comes in to do that. So that's generally what happens around Section 75 bills. Option B is around the committee going to provinces. And again, just bearing in mind that we've got two bills, there's one of two ways in which we can deal with this option. Firstly, if we choose to go to provinces, we can, and it's all nine provinces, we can do public hearings within 2 weeks. High impact, media hype, we set 2 weeks aside and we get all our public hearings done. And that can be done at the same time in which we have our advert out. So after 2 weeks of public hearings going out to the provinces, the argument may be, well, not all youth are available in the morning. So we can say, yes, we have sessions in the morning. If you have a plenary in the afternoon, you attend your plenary no matter where you are in the province. And then we do a second session again from 6 to 8 in the evening to accommodate those who are working or at university. So that's if we do 2 weeks, nine provinces. High impact, and we get everything done. At the end of the advert, when that's completed, we can still see who requested an opportunity for an oral presentation who we did not get in the provinces. So then we can still do, on top of the public hearings within 2 weeks, national public hearings at Parliament. The other option is for to go physically out on a weekend to provinces, all nine provinces, but that will take you at least 2.5 months or 2 months. Because if you're going to go to all nine provinces, you're only allowed to be leaving on a Thursday afternoon to start on a Friday, Friday afternoon, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then come back by Tuesday. That second option, going to all nine provinces, would take 2 months.
Recording in progress.
It's important to bear in mind, if we're going to have a council bill, how are we going to manage the time between the two? We know your 2023 is a really tough year because there's lots of things that members would need to finish and complete. It's the year before elections. So if there are timelines in which we need to finish these bills, practically, for example, if you opt to do provinces, we will not be able to go and do both bills to all the provinces every weekend, because that means you'd be traveling for 4 months every weekend. So just in terms of the way forward, Chairperson and members, one, in terms of the advert, we need guidance as to when you'd like the advert to go out and the duration. And then how we want to receive the submissions via email and online. And then secondly, in terms of public hearings, one, do we do it national? We invite people to do, come and make oral presentations. Or in terms of the option B, if you go to the provinces, it's either 2 weeks high impact, we get all the provinces done, or otherwise the more extended one, which is over 2 months. But looking at how we need to complete what we need to do, from the time we do the advert to the public hearing, then we still need to consolidate all the written submissions. Once we consolidate submissions between myself, Tasneem, the legal advisor, state law advisor in the department, members will be given an idea of what were the sort of issues that were coming through, to give you an overview of the input that was received. And then it's the department would give their input, and thereafter it's clause by clause deliberation. So technically, we're looking at probably 6 months to complete one bill. So the other guidance is that we need to get from Chairperson and members is you've got two bills. Both is important, but just having gone through what I have around the public participation, we need to decide what's going to be the most feasible and what is the, which is the bill that you're going to take on first and how you're going to do that. As we start with the one bill, by the time the council bill gets tabled and introduced, we'll also need to look at the process in that regard. So firstly, Chairperson and members, one is your advert and for how long you need to do that. Two, your public hearings, what you want to do. And then three, around the council bill and the NYDA bill, how do you want to deal with those public hearings? So that also from the admin side, we can know practically how to prepare. I think then Nisa will be able to give members more of an input around the financial implications around the public participation aspect and the role of the public education office. Chairperson, I'm just going to hand over to Nelisa just to talk to those two components in terms of one, the costing, and two, the role of public education, but also any other matters around approval for when we do public hearings and the process there. Thank you. Nelisa, if you can just let members know about the costing, the public education, and the impact around the parliamentary program and how we need to get approval for doing public hearings. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. In terms of the costing, Chair, Parliament, if the committee decides, okay, let me start with the advert. Parliament will pay for the advert in all languages, if we decide to have a national public hearing, whether it's via Zoom or in person in Parliament. So if committee decides to go on in provinces, government has to cover all the costs of supporting people from the area in which they are going to have public hearings in the venue check. But also, the committee must also decide in terms of if they decide to take the provincial public hearings, they must decide in terms of how many districts do you want to visit. But that also depends on the vastness of the province check. But the committee will have, or Parliament will have to bear the cost of all those transportation of the people who will come to that certain venue to come and give their inputs into your chair. In terms of organizing or mobilizing people to come and attend the public hearings at the provinces, there is public education. Now, those are the ones, the support staff there, they are the ones who publicize the bill. And will inform the community around the objectives of the bill and will organize people to come to give their inputs into the bill check. They will also arrange the venues and everything that is needed that is related to the public hearings at the provincial level check. And then Parliament will have to pay for all those costs check. At this moment, I don't know exactly how much is it that is allocated to the committee in order to conduct all those public hearings. I can check with our section manager, our finance office, and then I will inform the church as to how much is available. And my internet is very unstable, so I'm not sure if members can hear me. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think we still have to decide. Maybe for now, let's say we are done. And then in the next meeting next week, we'll decide on how we're going to do it. because you haven't discussed with me. I see this document for the first time. So we'll have to sit and discuss so that I'm able to guide honorable members accordingly. But we're going to deal with the bill next day. I think we have come to the end of the meeting, honorable members. We'll discuss this document next week. Is it okay, honorable members?
Yes, okay, honorable chair.
Okay. If there's nothing else that we're supposed to get information about, we can close our meeting.
Sorry, we have one set of minutes to adopt. We also have one set of minutes to
adopt. Let's adopt the minutes. Minutes of the 15th of November 2022, consideration and adoption of the committee's draft supplementary. No, we've dealt with this one. Yeah. And of the filling in of the vacancies in the CGE, briefing by the Secretariat on the National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. And briefing by the Secretariat of National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. Hello, we know it's a gender parallel level number 2. After femicide, I think Fanongene who end the update on the program. Are you present? Gender-based violence and femicide. Progress report. Suicide law related progress report. Ukumelo 2. Uti progress report on programs related to gender-based violence and femicide.
I'm not sure what's happening here. I see you can see the vacancy from my side. I'm not sure. That's what often. I'm trying to share it again. It doesn't know me. So I will change that once we're done.
Yeah, you need to change this. It's a puzzle. Is it the National Council for Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, or is it National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide? How do they write it, the department? Because you must write it according to how they write it as the department. It's how they write it. They check, double check on Nukashif. Nepal, how they write it as each department.
Will do.
Labor related, and we want to pull. So you need to restructure the thing, the briefing on what?
Chairperson, that's correct. It's National Council on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide.
Okay. But did you read what is written here? On progress report related to programs related to... Much better. Sounds better. Go down. Go up next. Go up. Come here, Anita. We have this one. You can go and clean my spelling errors and grammatical errors at your own time. Tina, if you look back, those 6.2 pants. Can I get a mover and for the adoption of the minutes?
Hi, Jim. PT here. I move for the adoption.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpichi. Can I get a seconder?
Masondo, I second.
Okay, the minutes of the 15th of November 2022 has been duly adopted. I think, Honorable Members, we have come to the end of our meeting. See you at 2 o'clock. The report that you're going Lungisa Lokeres, we are born in July at ANZU Redcon. So Lungisa Lap. At 2 o'clock, it doesn't need any declaration. Honorable Boni will present the report on behalf of the committee. I think it's, I don't know, Masiko, have you verified it's 2 minutes or it's 5 minutes?
Sure. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've verified it's 2 minutes.
Okay. So Honorable Boni is going to read our report as is. Honorable Boni, I'm sure yesterday after I've spoken to Kashifa, they've sent you the report. So you will represent us correctly, so I know. Honorable Members, did you receive the report, Honorable Boni, yesterday?
Yes,
sir. Okay, thank you very much. Yeah.
Just a quick one. So you did indicate there's no declaration. So it's only Honorable Boni that is going to speak, right?
Yes.
Just confirm.
Yeah. It's not declaration, no what. It's only that it's being specific. So Honorable Boni will just read the report and the chairperson. The chief whip will say, will request that the House report adopts the report, and then it passes. It's just formality according to parliamentary processes. Yeah, Lungisa Lap, home-based care. I think we have come to the end of the meeting, Honorable Members. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.